realize, hang on, that seems like a very quiet Adam, but it's obviously not. It's just the fucking headphones are over there. So obviously a mess. I should really know how to do this. It's been 108 shows already, but I still screw up. I don't know. I think I'm just basically quite dumb, I think. We're live, folks. So great to have you with us. Sorry for the short delay there. I just don't know how to use Bluetooth. I have to fess up. Welcome everybody to Brain Food Live on Air, episode 108. Bringing it to you every Friday, and I'm very, very excited today because this is one of our specials. We rarely ever run a show like this, but I remember the last time we had Andy on. I kind of agreed with him to say, listen, LinkedIn changed their platform with new products and new features so regularly, we can't have it as a once a year type of show because that's going to be out of date. There's all kinds of stuff happening on a week-to-week basis. So I've managed to get Andy to commit to turning up to do a Brain Food Live special with us once every quarter. And he's going to give us an update to say, okay, last 3 months this has happened on LinkedIn. What are the new products? What's happening with the algorithm? How do we need to operate as regular users of LinkedIn in order to get better? And we both know there's like few people on the planet that's better at keeping in touch of what's going on with LinkedIn than Andy Foote. So I'm really pleased to be here today and bringing Andy on in a sec. But obviously, Adam Gordon on the hot seat. Adam Gordon on the hot seat again. So good to see you, Adam. I hope you had a good week so far. Everything's going well with you. How's it going? Give me a ranking out of 10. 10 out of 10? 9 out of 10?
8 out of 10.
Okay.
I just want to tell you one thing that is interesting that happened this week. And I think a lot of people will find this funny or interesting or whatever. But about 300 meters from my house yesterday, the immigration, the UK Immigration Service, did a dawn raid. Now, a dawn raid at 10 a.m., that's not dawn. So anyway, they went into these people's house, pulled these two guys out of their house, put them in their van, and then other people were remonstrating with them, saying, what are you doing? You shouldn't be doing that. And instead of just slamming the doors and driving off, they stood arguing about it for an hour before somebody lay under the van and wedged themselves into the van. 8 hours later, there's 500 people around this van. They opened the doors and let them back out again. So
I didn't realize that was close to where you live, man.
300 meters away.
That's amazing. That's a really bad way, folks. If you haven't seen this, it's really worth kind of watching it because it's kind of the community coming together to really protect the neighbor. So the story is essentially, I think these guys were have an asylum sort of a claim that's been refused. They're making an appeal on that refusal, but basically UK toxic environment basically means that, you know, you're going to just ship them into some detention center whilst they're waiting for this to happen. And basically the neighbors say, no, we're not having it. And they blockaded the police van and say, look, we can't have that happening. You know, until that appeal is exhausted, these people can stay in their homes. So it's definitely a very heartwarming story happening in Glasgow, happening in Adam's neighborhood. So great to see. I hope you're on the streets, Adam. I hope you're getting in amongst it, mate. You know, what's going on?
Yeah, I did. I went down twice, once near the beginning and once at the climax. And it was... So it was something else. I've never seen anything like it.
It was amazing. It's all over. What's the place called? Poker Shields or something, is it?
Pollock Shields.
Pollock, yeah. Shields, that's it. Yeah, do a Twitter search on that and you'll be able to see it. All right, listen, folks, quick sound check as usual. I want to make sure everyone can hear me okay. So if you can hear me on Crowdcast, can you just please indicate that's the case? Just give me a thumbs up on there or give me a quick comment. We are multi-streaming, should I say, on LinkedIn. So if you can hear me on LinkedIn, give me some sort of reaction. Say you're curious, you know, one of those weird reactions you get on LinkedIn as an option. Be good to know whether you're there and we can hear you okay. And finally, we should be live on Facebook group as well. So we should be on the community. So if you can hear us there, give us a thumbs up, thumbs down, let me know you can hear me okay. Okay, cool. Some people are saying, yes, we can hear you. That's fine. Okay, that's good stuff. Okay, thank you firstly to our sponsors this week. We're back with Occupop. I'm really delighted that these guys are sponsoring us. Some great technology coming out of Ireland, folks. I don't know whether you agree, Adam, but over the last 5-10 years or so, is suddenly we've started to see really interesting, cool HR tech native to Ireland starting to emerge. So this is not like big US company or a European company coming in. It's Irish people building Irish products, and they're like spreading into nationally and also internationally as well. So Occupop basically are an ATS, but they're really kind of positioning as an entry-level ATS. If you're still on a spreadsheet, if you're still trying to work things out on email and stuff like this, you want something to use that gets you upgraded from that experience, give Occupop a try. They've been super generous to us by giving us, I think, an extended free trial. So 30-day free trial, used to be 14 days normally, but for this show and next, where they're sponsoring two in a row, you can actually try this for a month for free. So you might as well give it a shot. If you're on a spreadsheet trying to manage your recruitment that way, then would be a very good time to try and upgrade to a tool where you've got a month's worth of use, and then you can get to think whether this is the right thing for you. All right, cool. Just shared the links in the chat stream there. If you don't know who they are, by the way, it's occupop.com, so very easy to figure that out. All right, Adam, listen, apart from the excitement of, you know, public protests against probably the Tory government, I suppose that helps, that any kind of opportunity for the Scots to protest against Tory, a symbol of Tory government, that's going to happen. Did you read the newsletter last week? And if so, what was interesting about it, man?
I did. So the first thing I wanted to talk about was the monster labor cost and performance benchmarks article from HCMI.
Right.
52 of them, 52 labor cost and performance benchmarks. It is rammed with interesting insights that if anybody wants to use for, you know, their talent intelligence, then they might get some good stuff in there. And also, if you're in like recruitment tech or any kind of other vendor in our space, then you might want to make use of some of the data in there to support what is your, you know, your core message. Two of the things that really stood out to me were that there's been a shift in the way that companies in America, and you don't think of America as being necessarily the number one most sort of flexible place for employees, but 60% of employees have got employers have got flexible parent like arrangements. 44% of them have already in the US got flexible, like formal policies around where they will work. So
you know, location, some, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, around being flexible.
Very interesting.
A lot of, you know, that wouldn't have been the case 2 years ago, no chance.
No, not at all. It's weird. I mean, US is obviously such a huge country, and it's obviously different state by state and all this type of stuff. So super confusing from anybody from the outside in, probably very confusing for the people in the states themselves, to be honest, to figure out what the state laws are in terms of what you can and cannot do, what you're applicable for. But I think it may be the country that might be best suited to this moment, because there's always this inherent, interest in innovation, kind of a impulsive, kind of an instinctive aversion to bureaucracy, if you like. I think that's part of the US culture. So that kind of helps when systems start to get broken down and new things start to get made. I wonder now maybe a good moment for US companies to particularly take some of the lead here. So I would expect that to happen, particularly with the technology businesses where the US, I think, is in a huge lead. Do check out that. Go ahead, Adam.
Yeah, I just want to add to that something this is a shout out to iSIMS. iSIMS, I have learned in the last, this week, that iSIMS have got a take vacation whenever you want policy. They have also got a 90 minutes a day meeting free section, no meetings, and a particular 90 minute period. And the other thing they've done is they've got a 6 days a year company shutdown. So it's like 6 days on top of your annual holiday entitlement, but this is not take it when you want. This mandatory is everybody yeah. is off, so it's everyone is off.
Yeah.
You know, and it didn't have that, you know, 2 years ago. So
no, that's
just an example of a big American company that's gone and done some really great things.
Well, that's maybe Steve Lucas, who's on Founders Focus earlier this year. And he's kind of, I got the vibe from him that he was very, very much progressive in that view, and particularly of the need to try and change, the working patterns of corporate US. I think it's very, very important. Very important for HR tech companies to actually exemplify that, because, you know, if you're building a tech product that's trying to change the way in which people work, then you've also got to represent. So great to see that leadership from iSIMS. So well done on those guys. Excellent stuff. Oh, by the way, I've just shared the link to this HCMI blog post. The guy's got Arne Tran, by the way. He's literally just compiling these posts with, you know, pulling out these well-researched data points. I think it's just simply useful to have a hold of this post, bookmark it, or, you know, scrape it or whatever you want, because if you're ever putting together a slide deck or you're trying to put a business case together or whatever it is, he's just compiled this information for you and effectively done the referencing. So super useful for you to keep an eye on that blog post and actually follow this dude as well. Okay, give us one more, Adam. A couple more.
I've only done one. Let me give you Tipjar.
Right. Yep. Twitter. Right.
Mm-hmm. The reemergence. Yeah, the reemergence of Tipjar. So you, they're making it easy for you to effectively receive money for doing what you do online and making it easy for people to contribute. So you share particular hashtags on Twitter and people can find you and your work there. And Tipjar was acquired by Twitter a couple of years ago, but nothing really happened with it. And all of a sudden it's reemerged and apparently user numbers are high.
Twitter have gone nuts recently with loads of new products coming out. This is one of them. So this is the idea that actually, you know, those wonderful, there's some people that are amazing on Twitter. I mean, I'm terrible. I just tweet about Steve Bruce. Why, you know, we need to give him a 10-year contract, whatever, trolling the Newcastle fans. I do actually believe he should be extended, but not 10 years. But anyway, other people are just adding this enormous value by describing important events. You've seen with COVID-19, actually, some of the people are following, the epidemiologists and people that are, you know, experts at this, they're really breaking things down for you to understand. And I'm thinking, right, these people should be rewarded in this in some way, but it's impossible to do it. Tipjar is Twitter's way of doing it. So you can actually go and like pay this person a micro payment if you think this person adds value to you. You know, you follow them for a reason. Guess what? You can actually support them and encourage them to do more. And you can imagine, if you have a large following, 10,000, 100,000 people, let's say, you get like a percentage, 10% of those throwing you, you know, a couple dollars a month or whatever, it might be something that people can start doing as a certainly a supplement to their income. But the larger guys might may even be able to do this as a living. So that's a positive thing in my view. So check out the tip jar if you're a Twitter person.
It's part of the whole movement towards like getting paid for what you do, for your hobbies and being able to actually, you know, make money from doing what you enjoy. And I guess Patreon is something that brought it into the public consciousness a little bit more. And then things like OnlyFans have, you know, gone and done that as well.
OnlyFans, I think, are the ones that have broke through in terms of, it was just astonishing how quickly that grew, and also astonishing some of the money people can make. And it basically opened people's eyes to say, look, if you have an audience, you can, you know, there's a percentage that would pay for that, particularly if it's exclusive content, let's say. And obviously, yeah, OnlyFans is, you know, pretty much, you know, in the sex industry, so to speak, which, you know, it, by the way, you know, if it's well policed and well legislated for, I see no reason why that's a problem. But that's one of the reasons why it was like quite easy to monetize. But there's no reason why this couldn't apply to other forms of content. And Twitter is one of those. There's a guy I follow, Sahil Bloom. I think he's amazing. Great storyteller, great threader. I want to tip him because he's worth that. It's educational for me. You know, it's worth like $10 at least as a one-off to say, thank you, you've given me that value. So yeah, it's a part of this creator economy. You know, if you're doing stuff that's seemingly for free, but you've got a big audience that are getting value from it. Can you secure a bunch of micropayments from that and potentially, you know, generate a revenue? Maybe that's a LinkedIn thing coming forward. Who knows? You know, it's a big enough network. You get people get hundreds of thousands of views. Why should that? Andy Foote might be one of those people. Coming on soon, Andy, we'll talk about this. People get massive value from Andy Foote going on to LinkedIn and saying, LinkedIn is doing this. I reckon he can monetize that. But LinkedIn don't have the functionality for that to happen. But Twitter has shown an example of how it could. So anyway, one more, mate.
Okay. One more is Culture Amp's article. Culture Amp are in a great position to be able to talk about this, but they've done an article about the reason why people leave companies, and in order, it's career growth, role expectations, and inclusion. Inclusion, I don't imagine, was one of them 5 years ago, but people are more empowered and definitely more conscious that if they don't feel included, that's not right. Whereas in the past, they've just taken it.
Yep.
So
you just accept it. Yep.
I mean, career opportunity. I am surprised that They Hate Their Boss is not one of those top three. But career progression is obviously the reason why they do it. Unless you're working in a Fortune 500 size organization, you almost certainly have to move out. You're not going to have, you know, if you've got high ambition, one employer is not going to support the speed of which you want to grow.
Yeah, and often we don't design for it. Like, big part of the problem, one of the things that we've seen happening, I don't know whether you who at this point have thought about it in your own business this year, this idea of career pathing. You know, when you create a job, you can't just like sit there with that job. You've got to think 1 year, 2 year, 3 year down the line, how does the career path move for this opportunity, and design that, or at least provide pathways for it, because that's going to be critical for retaining that person longer than the moment that you've got them for. 99.999% of all jobs are created for that one moment, right? There's no sense of career development built into that job design. We have to do that, because you're going to lose people for sure, especially the people you least want to lose. You know, they're the ones that you need to keep. They're the ones most likely to go. Culture Amp, definitely check out that link. Awesome blog. They do some of the best blogs on this type of stuff, by the way, obviously, and linked heavily with their product as well, which you should check out if this is of interest to you. But their content alone, I think, is worth your review.
Just want to quickly mention something on your point about, you know, jobs are created for that moment in time, what you need somebody to do. I always, every time I run a small company, 20 people, and every time somebody joins our company, I do a kind of, might be 30 minutes, might be 60 minutes, like get to know them and find out what their aspirations are and all that kind of thing. And I will always say that if they get to the point where they've outgrown their job and they're looking for what's next, then talk to me straight away and I'll work out what we can do in the organization. And if I'm being really honest with them as well, if we can't do something, and I'll help them to get connected with people that they should be talking to about moving on out. And I've got a really great like diaspora of alumni who have, you know, gone off to much bigger things. And I'm very proud of that.
That might actually be a sell for the business, you know, in terms of as you as an employer, if you can point to people who have progressed on, why should we not be proud of that? Well, we shouldn't be ashamed to say, look, this person spent 2-3 great years with the business, now has moved on to this. This is a big component of them stepping forward. That is got to be great branding, hasn't it? We've got to lose this idea that we're there to possess people for the rest of their lives. It could well be that we're kind of borrowing them for a time. You know, we've got them for this period where our interests are aligned. Let's build value in that period. Let's keep aligned. If we are still aligned, we're going to keep it together. If those things diverge in any way, let's support that situation rather than force it in. So yeah, super interesting. Lots of things we need to think about on that. Okay, cool. Awesome, man. Let's get on with it. Because the option is we need to get Mr. Foote onto the screen. Let's see if we can do this successfully. Rather disturbingly, Andy sent me a Google Meet link and said, hey, Hung, is this the link that we're going to be on? No, Andy. We're on Crowdcast, mate. Surely you know. Hopefully he's going to be okay and he'll be on with us very shortly. Oh, by the way, folks, if you have any questions for Andy at all during the course of this, please ask them and ask a question function at the bottom of the screen here on Crowdcast, and we're going to try and get to them ASAP. For the folks on LinkedIn and Facebook, do comment if you want any questions answered by Andy. I'm going to try and pick those up and I'll get to them if I can, even though I'm not able to comment back. So, Saji, I wasn't able to share that link with the HCMI, but I will do that after the show. I simply can't get onto LinkedIn right now simply because I'm looking at one screen. Okay, there he is, Andy Foote.
Hung, Adam, how are you? How's my sound?
Your sound is great. I'm shocked at the hair, though. When did that happen?
Adam told me that I can't come on unless he said I was looking far too tramp-like and like I just survived COVID. So I thought that was part of the deal.
Mate, I think the hair is amazing. Don't get me wrong. But you know what? The flowing locks were really switched on for me, to be honest with you. So I kind of miss those. So, you know. Back. Yeah, make sure that happens.
I'm sure we saw less of your face last time you were on as well.
Well, my fat face. Yeah, that's the why I grow the full beard, so I can hide the fat jowls.
You had a lot bigger beard when you were on last time.
That's I know true. This is the summer look, right? So it's getting warm in here in the Chicago burbs, and I was driving in the Acura MDX. The window was down, and the hair kept on flicking in my eyes, and it was freaking annoying. So I said, screw this, I'm going to the barber, I'm gonna get it cut all off, and unlike Samson, I am super strong still,
even more powerful than ever before. Okay, well, listen, Andy, for the people who don't know you, worth introducing yourself as always. Who are you and what it is you do, man?
Yeah, so I'm a LinkedIn brand strategist. I help folks with their LinkedIn presence, but also their content, mainly their content strategy. That's what I do. Find me on LinkedIn. And of course, you know, I talk the walk. So if my about section doesn't impress you, then don't hire me, frankly.
That's true. You got huge pressure, don't you? It's like if your LinkedIn looks terrible, it's like how on earth are you going to ever ship your services as a LinkedIn expert?
Exactly. The problem is there is this condition where like the plumber has always got a slightly like leak, you know, dodgy sink with a leak in it, and you know the web development agency's got a crap website, and you know you do get that quite a lot.
You do, don't you? I don't think that's acceptable. I mean, at some point where you say, look, I'm too busy to look after myself, I get that. But for certain types of service, like a web design company, like, come on, you cannot not have
absolutely.
Yeah, you must be right up there, right?
Yeah. I mean, all these LinkedIn experts, you know, if you check their activity section, they're all activity section, you can pretty much almost immediately see whether or not they are actually any good.
Right. There is Andy tip number one. If you're looking for some reason, if you're not going to pay Andy for the service and you're looking for a LinkedIn expert, but you look at their activity, don't just look at their profile, look at what they are doing on LinkedIn. And if it is like a surprisingly dormant or placid place, if they're not getting any engagement on their posts or whatever, that's actually a huge red flag, in my opinion. Because it means that they don't really know what they're doing. Yeah, cool. Yeah. All right, Andy, listen, let's run through exciting things that have happened in the last 3 months. Because you were on last when, I think January or something, so maybe 4 or 5 months actually. So
yeah,
is anything interesting? It seems that a lot has happened in this period of time.
This is going to be a very, very short show because no, there nothing, absolutely. That, and I'm out.
That's it.
Yeah,
see you later,
right,
folks.
So, yeah, I mean, recently, as a matter of fact, LinkedIn last month have announced that LinkedIn Creator Mode is coming. So that's rolling out. And just prior to that, I don't know about you guys, but I've been all about Clubhouse. And following on from Clubhouse, that's been going for over a year now. Silicon Valley hot thing. Hot new chick on the block, and there are copycats, and one of the copycats is LinkedIn. So LinkedIn have announced, probably I think unofficially, but they've let it leak through various media channels that they are going to do their own version, and we don't know what it's called. So I'm calling it LinkedIn Audio right now. And one of the, I think it was TechCrunch that showed a fleshed out visual of what that might look like. And I wrote an article, a post actually, where I was comparing just both. And just on the scant information that I had at that time, I was making some observations. So I think today, you know, I can talk about LinkedIn Audio and, you know, how they might do that, how it might compare with Clubhouse. And I can also talk about creator mode. So which one of those would you like me to start with?
Let's talk about LinkedIn Audio, because that's really quite exciting. So Clubhouse, everyone knows about Clubhouse, raised about $40 million. Suddenly there's competitors everywhere. Twitter Spaces is coming out. Reddit Talks has come out. Mark Zuckerberg was on. I think he went on to Clubhouse to say, yeah, we're going to do an audio only. So Facebook are going to launch something. Clearly, it's a huge market for LinkedIn, because the biggest problem is always getting the audience. And if you went ahead and did something on LinkedIn as an audio only, like, how many people would actually listen to that? I think a lot of people would. In fact, let me know, folks, if there was like a, let's say you're watching this on LinkedIn Live right now, which I think a couple of people might be. If we were doing an audio only version of this, would you tune into this? Let me know yes, no on that, because it'd be quite interesting what the appetite would be. But I would be surprised if it isn't a higher uptake to video, because it's less commitment for the people, right? You just switch it on, wash your dishes, get on with your day. You don't have to watch the screen and just, you know, get on with it. Okay, Peggy said no straight away. Not only no, but no with an exclamation mark as well. So definitively not. I totally get that, Peggy. Thank you very much. Okay, tell me about
it. Can I just make a really quick point about Clubhouse? Have either of you seen the new user statistics by month over the last 6 months? Because it's like 5 million in January, like 6 million in February, 14 people last month, something like that. It was like, it has peaked and troughed as fast as it's peaked. I imagine that distribution is the main reason for that, and LinkedIn could be completely different. So looking forward to Andy's perspective.
I would say also because of the pollution on Clubhouse, no disrespect to the people who are contributing to that and stuff like this, but because it is so open that anybody can create a room, and anybody, if you're moderating, you can bring anyone on. It just becomes quite a messy situation straight away, and quite difficult to figure out what is actually a great room to be in. So the quality control inevitably goes down. It's like having a cool club and then everyone turns up, and then suddenly it's no longer cool. So there's an element of that prestige sort of thing as well. Anyway, what's your view of Clubhouse? You're a big user, Andy. Have you actually spotted a difference in the quality of experience in the course of time you've engaged with this channel?
Right. So that's a great question, because, you know, spotting quality, finding quality rooms, finding quality discussions is part of the issue, I think, which Clubhouse have never really resolved. And it's actually come in at a $4 billion valuation most recently. Apparently, Facebook tried to buy them in, I think, February, around, I think, the $2 billion mark. But Adam's right. It was actually the app downloads have cratered recently, and that's caused a lot of concern on their end, because to all its extents and purposes, it looks like Clubhouse founders aren't really interested in improving the product. What they're trying to do is make sure that to stoke the interest and to keep that, you know, that price high, because it looks like they're just getting ready to sell it at some stage to the highest bidder, and then they'll go off and do whatever, you know, next project. So this kind of, I think, fell into one of the co-founders' laps. A guy called Paul Davison, he's been playing around in this space for a while, and he said, well, what about this idea? This might work. And then, of course, it did. It became huge. And I think one of the key problems, one of the key issues that they made for themselves was not letting Android in early enough, right? So all the Androiders that have now suddenly been let in the US, that is, are probably going, yeah, we don't care, because, you know, you've kept us out for so long. Or maybe they've borrowed an iPad and they've tried it that and they've not been, I don't know, they've not been sufficiently impressed. So there are a number of issues, right? There's the hallway algorithm. So the hallway is supposed to show you these relevant rooms. Now, I made the mistake of joining Clubhouse as soon as I joined Clubhouse of following a few big names or a few people who are getting followers, apparently. And now I get these breakfast with billionaire or millionaire type clubs every time, shown in my room every time. There's rooms shown in the hallway every time whenever I fire up the app. And sure, I can fire, I can swipe them away, but they keep coming back. Right. So that was my initial mistake. And the way that you can normally reverse that mistake is by unfollowing those folks. Well, that's a nightmare. If you followed, 100 folks, you have to try and find them, unfollow. You still get the room. My point is, you don't get relevant rooms. It's not a smart algo. It doesn't show you, based on whatever you've shared in your bio, what you might conceivably be interested in. So that's one problem. The other problem is, why give everyone the opportunity to build a club? Why give everyone the opportunity to build form a club like twice a month forever for a year? So 24 clubs, why would you want to do that? So there's been no sort of thinking about, all right, how do we get the right people to build a community? How do we do that instead of just this scattergun, everyone gets to build a club? And that club just becomes a container of followers. There's no benefit to building it. It's not like build it and they will come. That's not what's happening. Another thing that's happening is that people are not attending rooms. I've been running various rooms with a few pals, and the room participation has been going down. So that's a worrying thing, because sure, for all of the, I love the small rooms. Yeah, but you want growing rooms, right? You want certainly the usual crowd, but you also want fresh injection of potential speakers. Another aspect is speakers. You really need to have a mechanism to rate those, because people who waffle or repeat themselves or self-promote, huge turnoffs. And this is like a speaking circuit, right? If you're on stage, you better deliver the goods every time. And I think like a way of rating, so thumbs up, thumbs down, for example, speakers, that would have helped. I'm not sure if the wherewithal is available, but that's really what it needs, because a lot of rooms are hit and miss. You'll enter a room and you'll listen to the people on stage and you think, okay, well, that was okay, but I've got more pressing stuff to do. Yeah. So there are a bunch of other things.
Let me introduce one more that I thought was interesting. The etiquette was also annoying for me, because let's say you're listening to a room, getting all the speakers to introduce themselves or, have a very prolonged kind of introduction before you get into the conversation. It was like, I should have just turned up like 20 minutes after the thing started, because yeah, I'm not learning anything. I'm just hearing about, this mini pitch that this person is now talking about. And it's like, it's not what I'm here for. You want to dive into that pub type experience, right? You want the pub straight in.
Straight away.
What you look for. Yeah.
And that's what the bio is for, right? If you have a fully fleshed out bio, you don't need to suffer through someone introducing themselves. Another thing which, Paul Davison, in these regular town halls that runs every Sunday morning, he has said in the last three or four that I attended, he says it every time. He says, look, don't mod everyone in the room. And despite him saying that, people still, right, there are still rooms with 16, 20 mods, which is insane. It's ridiculous. You've lost control of the room. You don't know, because every time you give someone that green bean, they can then mod someone else. They can boot you out of your own room. It's viral, it's ridiculous. And the reason people do that in some of the bigger rooms is it's all about accruing followers. So they sit there like the Americans have an expression, like a bump on a log, and they don't contribute. And it's like, look at me, I'm in this big room, and therefore I must be important, therefore you must follow me. And it's BS, and that whole follower thing is BS too, because that's just a vanity stat. It doesn't matter if you've got hundreds of thousands of people following. What does that mean exactly? What we need, is a way to rate your speaking, to make sure that you're giving the value. And then there's a fascinating piece by a couple of pieces, actually, by Sean Puri, P-U-U-R-I, Sean, yes, with... Right. So Sean, you may know, is he's been through this with Blab IM back in 2000, I think it was 2015. And this was video streaming and it was, you know, all of the windows on screen, and essentially it folded, and it was amazing at the time, but it folded basically because there's a fundamental conflict between chilling and content. So at the end of the day, the chillers were there hours upon hours upon hours, using it purely for social, hanging out, partying, doing all that stuff, right? The content producers were not there for long enough. They went in, they did their stuff, they got out. And ideally, you've got to figure out which of these do you want to be. And that's the fundamental issue that Clubhouse have too, is it's the community that want to chill, that want to hang, versus the people that are there for business, essentially, and they want to bring value, and they want to get something out of it. And you can probably do both. And we try to do that in one of our, you know, shows, LinkedIn International Office Hours. And it's all about the back and forth between the various mods, bring people up on stage. But, you know, as a LinkedIn trainer, a guy who actually, you know, charges good money to help people with their profiles, I'm not going to give that away for free. So there's a certain amount that I'm going to give, but I'm not there to do a review. No, I'm there to help answer some questions, and ultimately it becomes pretty boring if all you're doing is answering the same questions again. The tipping structure was not good either, right? If you're going to tip, make it public, because that does two things. It shows exactly who's tipping, right? And it encourages other people to tip. If you hide that, ain't going to happen. And I know that from experience. Regardless of how good the advice you give, it's just not worth your time.
So lots of problems with this. How is LinkedIn audio going to be better? Or do you think they're going to just throw something out there that's kind of half-assed? Because LinkedIn are not sort of, no disrespect to LinkedIn, but there's a lot of like seemingly half-baked stuff out there, right? I mean, there's already audio and a one-to-one thing. There's already a video thing that's on LinkedIn. No one's using these
groups.
Things. Yep, groups, right. Is so back and forth.
Right. So this could be very interesting. There were a bunch of LinkedIn product guys and gals, fairly senior, on Clubhouse itself. For 2 months, it was like, I think February, March, they were there, and it was really interesting that they were there, and it seemed very much like that they were taking notes and just testing whatever they could. And now they've disappeared. They've vanished. They're not there anymore. So that must have been their info gathering phase for their own. And you know, your guess is as good as mine. I hope that they look at what Clubhouse have done and the failings there. And I hope that they come up with a model that works very well with the LinkedIn ecosystem. So whether and Dan Roth in Clubhouse, when he was asked about groups specifically, he said this. He said, I'll tell you two things about groups. Number one, we have a large team working on groups. Number two, we've made an investment this year, which you ought to see play out this year. And that's all he would say. Now, whether that big investment refers to bringing LinkedIn audio to groups is the big, you know, $64 million question. That's the logical way to do it, right? Because there are already these ready built communities that have been neglected for many, many years now that are very spammy. What better way to reinvigorate, right, those communities? Because I run these groups, and I'll tell you a couple of things. They're still growing, right? So people join these groups, think they're spammy and useless, but guess what? They don't leave, right? So they still join and they stay. So I think it's a prime opportunity for LinkedIn audio to come in, to be available to those communities. And then of course, you know, it all depends on how that's going to be managed by the group admin or owner, right? How can they run them? Will it be hands off? Will they set certain rules in place? Will they decide who gets to run these audio meetings? Or, you know, so all of those questions have to be answered. But that, I think, is a logical play. And also events, live, audio in events, which has already actually been hacked. It's already been hacked together. So myself, another LinkedIn trainer, Judy Fox, she actually did it first. She said, I know, let me try this. Let me run a LinkedIn live. Let me run a LinkedIn event, and let me run the Clubhouse session in congruence with what's happening there. And then the benefit there was you had chat, And you had two types of chat, because you get the messenger chat that's driven by the event, and then you get the event chat itself. The event chat is wide open. There's no limits. The messenger chat is capped at 50 people, so that's a restriction. So you have these two streams, chat streams, running in you know, right alongside the Clubhouse event, the Clubhouse room. Now, Clubhouse did at one point say, look, all of these back channels are happening while the events are happening, while the rooms are in progress. So we're thinking about actually doing our own chat. That never came to pass. So to me, that also is a strike against that this product is not developing enough. This is just a cash cow waiting to be sold, and we'll do granular updates or minor updates. So that's, I think, potentially very exciting. But LinkedIn Audio, if they do it well, could certainly make a big difference in terms of people trying to get stuff done, but also for bringing communities closer together, without a doubt.
On that note, Andy, I think the groups is super interesting, because I don't know how many of us are members of groups and never left. Hands up if that's one of you. I would say almost everyone is the case. But how many of us actually own groups that you've totally forgotten about? I know I do. I think I've got about 40 groups, and I've forgotten about them. But I reckon there's lots of people that have signed up to these groups that probably I need to revisit. And if actually there is commitment to rebuild these groups in some way, suddenly you might have an audience that's worth thinking about. So, folks, I'd be interested to know whether this is you. Like, if you own a group, check it out. See what's happening in that group. You probably have not visited it yourself for years. For me, years. But after this conversation, I think I'm going to dive back in and just see what's going on, because no doubt, I at one point had 40 groups. I think it was a maximum, and I just went nuts and thought, all right, I just create all these groups. Some of them grew to a reasonable size, 20, 30,000, something like that. It's a decent audience if you can resuscitate that. So why not? So worth bearing in mind. Any indication, you said end of this year, something groups-wise might sort of be rolled out?
So I think that's logical. To wait longer than that, I don't understand why it would take them that long. They're a fairly big organization. I'm not sure how fast they can move, but Clubhouse started in Silicon Valley last March. So they must have been aware of them since, from that time on. And maybe they've been doing some fine tuning. That research was part of the fine tuning exercise. But for Dan Roth to say, a big investment and we'll see it this year, leads me to think that, ideally summer, hopefully not autumn. That would be amazing. And I've got large groups. I've got, I've got an alternative dispute resolution group with over 20,000 members. And I've got a smattering of other groups. So, in aggregate, over 50,000 members, which are just waiting for, to be brought closer together, to coalesce properly and, get shit done.
On that note, folks, I hate to use the word acquisition, but the building of an audience, it takes time and effort, no matter what sort of platform or what feature it is. But once you have done that, it kind of gives you this persistent advantage. And it's, I think, super, super underappreciated, a thing that, not enough of us do, because it might be the platform will change in some way that suddenly renders this relevant or irrelevant or whatever it might be. But if you get yourself in the right side of the, you catch the wave in the right way, so to speak, you might just find yourself with a competitive advantage against your competition, no matter what the hell you're doing. So, groups is definitely one of those things. I came close to deleting all my groups at one point. I'm very pleased I didn't do that. And I just thought, just leave them dormant. It's not harming me. I can afford to ignore it, but potentially now recover it. And there might be quite a big audience there that you can use. Adam, you're about to say something, mate.
I was just going to say, I've got a few that are like, I've got quite a few with thousands of members, but what I built them for was to practice on how do you build a community. And, I failed with loads and loads of different ways of doing it, and then, worked out a way that it really works. And I still own quite a few groups that I built for other people, and for some reason I still seem to own them. Once Professionals in Education in Scotland, with a few thousand people who are all like lecturers and teachers and stuff. That's not great. Really an audience for me now.
No, but it's super useful for somebody, right? So I wonder whether there might be a secondary market developing somewhere.
I have a friend who sold a LinkedIn group last year for £50,000 sterling. He was not allowed to sell the group, of course. So yeah. He built a landing page, he built a website page and sold that, which embedded into the website page was all the details for taking over the LinkedIn group.
Amazing. That's amazing. These things, they're worth value, right? Digital value. That audience is important. So very, very interesting. And LinkedIn Audio, I do think they've got a chance. Twitter Spaces is rolling out. I'm going to experiment with that. I think that's also going to be chaos, by the way. There's no reason why the control would be any better than Clubhouse, maybe even worse, to be honest with you. Something tells me that LinkedIn might be better because of the professional nature of it. I think identity verification is higher on LinkedIn because it's one of those platforms where it makes most sense for you to be your real you. Unless you're an out and out hacker, it's your professional profile. You're making your way forward. It makes sense not to fake it here. So you've got like connection with identity, and then I think people will be behaved better because of that. So it's the platform, it's set up to succeed. I just hope that the product team, if they were listening to the Clubhouse sessions, have learned the right lessons and have got something in play.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point, Hung, that in terms of either being blocked or shadow blocked or being somehow censored because they don't like what you're saying. Let's see how LinkedIn does that. But in terms of the professional, the professional strength of LinkedIn and the I think the hopefully the that will be I think that'll be that'll be reflected in the quality of the conversations that people are having. The other interesting thing about Clubhouse is the diversity. So a lot of Black voices in particular loved the fact that, okay, I've got a platform, I've got a stage. And so diversity was interesting, a huge sort of mix of cultures. And there was a portion of the black participants who were saying, yeah, we don't like the way that this is being run because they're using us in a way because we're not actually benefiting from this. So they're using our race as an advantage. And for example, one of the figureheads was a black musician. And I think that was something that was just foisted upon him. He wasn't asked in advance. He was just, this will be an honor. So let's choose Bomani. So there was a contingent of folks who were saying, yeah, we feel we're being used. So that's an interesting. You'll find plenty of stuff written about that too.
I hope someone's doing like an anthropology of this because it's fascinating in terms of group formation, identity formation. How do you actually create a good room, good culture? How do you actually have a toxic culture also? That's very evident. I remember participating in the last room I participated in was this evangelical room, actually. I, for whatever reason, I just randomized it and I thought, all right, let's join this. And it was basically this dude who did claim some sort of divine, I think he thought it was a second coming or something. And he was just having arguments with other people about scripture, like when people like potentially doubted him about, his recollection here. And he's like, oh my goodness, what's happening here? Anyway, craziness, but interesting anthropologically, as I said.
Yes, go ahead, Adam.
I was just going to say, I think one thing is definitely the case. And that is it's going to become harder and harder to create social networks. Because there's so many that become fads because they just don't take off. And one of the reasons that, a lot of people said, Instagram's going to kill Facebook and then TikTok's going to kill Facebook. Everything's going to kill Facebook. But so many people have got they've got their lives embedded into Facebook and their photo albums from the last 15 years are in Facebook, for example. So there's certain things that are probably not going away. And that's just going to make it harder for anybody to really become sustainable. And I think about House Party, which was very popular last year for about 4 months, maybe 3 months. Don't know, but sustainability is something that is going to be very difficult to achieve for an independent.
This is why LinkedIn's got a huge chance. I mean, it has a huge chance because there's a dependency on LinkedIn that isn't an alternative, really, for a white collar worker looking, typing into a keyboard, looking at a computer screen. If that's what you do for a living, chances are LinkedIn's a critical tool for you at some point, not an optional one, actually. If you were walking around and you didn't have a LinkedIn profile, it probably would be quite strange. People would ask questions about this. Engineers aside, I can understand where they may have deleted a profile and expunged it. But most people working in a knowledge-based business probably rely on this in some way. I know if LinkedIn kicked me off, it would be a devastating thing. It would be a significant problem for me. And I know other people that have been banned from LinkedIn for, you know, possibly the correct reasons, because of abuse of T's and C's and so on. But it's devastating for them. There could be change of business or change of career path because what they were doing previously was so dependent on that channel. So I think LinkedIn has a huge chance if they just get the thing right product-wise. But whether they have an interest in doing it is another debate. They've got other fish to fry. You know, the integration with Microsoft is starting to happen a bit more. It looks like there's all kinds of skill taxonomy things they're looking at. I don't know whether you've also seen a recent update. Whether it's that reason or not, I don't know, but they're trying to improve how people validate skills, aren't they? So instead of just going with recommendations, they're asking you to do the assessment. So I don't know whether anybody's had this experience where there's a skill, but you have then an opportunity to validate your competence at the skill by doing what is in effect a questionnaire, I think. But apparently it's really hard to do. It's like quite hard to pass that thing.
They've been doing that. They're trying to figure out two things actually when they are testing that before you give that endorsement for a particular skill. They're trying to figure out how strong is the relationship between you and the endorsee, and also how highly do you rate that particular person's skill. And they're doing that, I think, because of the way that skills were initially rolled out. If you remember, it was quite spammy, isn't it? Do you want to endorse Adam? All right, I'll endorse Adam. Oh, and Adam endorses me back. And people saying, well, why did Adam endorse me? I don't even know Adam, or I've never worked with Adam. So clearly there's a lack of, you know, credibility with the way that they were rolled out. It's been happening for the past 18 months at least, that LinkedIn is trying now to somehow get better information on the nature, on the strength of these skills that we're endorsing. And that leads me to suspect that there might be a refresh of that particular feature, and they might change the name to get away from that stinky sort of endorsements, or, you know, fuzzy endorsements, whatever endorsements are supposed to mean. Because you and I understand endorsements differently, right? Endorsements are completely different in real life than they are on LinkedIn. But the other thing about Clubhouse that I'll go back to just briefly is that, you know, the potential for scammers to, you know, get money from people who are perhaps don't know any better. And this comes back to what we were talking about at the outset with, you know, you can simply do that on LinkedIn by looking at someone's all activity section. Sure, you can read their about section, but that's what they're saying. That's what they're telling you. The all activity section gives you much more of a reveal. And that's, you know, that's not something on Clubhouse that you can do really easily, because again, it's the bio. That's all you've really got. And you've got someone who's lording it on stage and talking a good game, and, you know, perhaps saying they're a millionaire or they only work with X level, coaching clients, and you have no idea. And there was a fascinating, back and forth between one VC, very well respected in Silicon Valley, who was basically calling out some of these scammers and saying, asking all of the right questions about their business and, you know, what their real name is, et cetera, et cetera. And it was absolutely But that, yet these scammers get thousands of people in a room. So that's not going to happen on LinkedIn, I don't think, as much. So the final thing is creator mode, guys. Oh, suspensions, just briefly, suspensions has started happening ever since LinkedIn launched LinkedIn professional community policies. This happened towards the end of last year, and this is essentially LinkedIn doubling down on the type of activities that they will take action on. So
give
it overlays,
what are those things?
Overlays the user agreement, right? So they don't want you to automate. All right, so automation is very, very bad. Don't do that, and it's showing in various ways. So, for example, now you can only send a maximum of 100 invitations to connect a week. It's about 100. I know, right? That's going to be tough. So that's clearly aimed at people who are using automation. Automation does fundamentally two things. I think number one, it profile browses, so it'll do all that profile browsing for you, and number two, it'll send invitation connection requests, and it'll also send in-mail. So three things, or not in-mails, but messaging. So those are the things that LinkedIn doesn't want to happen on the platform. They see it as an abuse, and obviously it's a pain in the ass to anyone on the receiving end. And that's one of them. Another one would be if you're using Chrome extensions to do anything, right? That's specifically not allowed in the user agreement. Anything abusive, of course, is going to be it. And I'll give you a silly example, right? They're going to watch language too. So there's a bot that will be triggered if you're using certain language that falls into a category that LinkedIn would rather you wouldn't use. For example, I wrote "the law is an ass" in a comment, which is perfectly fine. It's a well-known saying, right? Especially amongst lawyers. And I was flagged for ass.
And automatically or by a user?
Automatically. Automatically. Right.
Interesting.
Yes.
An ass is an animal.
I know. So it's American, right? They put it on their ban list. And the thing is, I can't appeal that. So it just hides that comment, but it has repercussions. For example, part of the LinkedIn Live application, which is, you've got to have video creation history. You've got to have a large-ish audience. You've got to have two-factor authentication switched on. You've got to be a good LinkedIn citizen. My word, not theirs, right? If you've been a bad boy and you've been, that comment, right, has been flagged, then guess what? That LinkedIn Live application has died. You have to start a new one, but that's why it was killed. I mean, I got that from an inside source. So all of this ties in. The LinkedIn professional community policies, they will suspend you first, ask questions later. So it's then up to you to follow through. Apparently you get some message saying, yeah, you've been suspended. They'll probably never tell you specifically what it was. That's the other annoying thing. There's even something that there's an average threshold of activity of your use on LinkedIn. If you're above that, if it spikes above that, then they think it's automation. It may not be automation. It may be you just being an energetic user of LinkedIn that week, right? That could result in a suspension, which is insane. I'm saying it's a very, very blunt tool, and I'm not sure if it's getting fine-tuned. But like I say, suspend first, we'll figure it out later. But when you're suspended, your profile vanishes, and you've got to work with LinkedIn, obviously, speedily to sort it out.
And like I say, it's not easy to do that, is it? Because
it's not easy.
Hidden away in terms of how, I mean, last time I had certain issues at this point, for whatever reason, I was like in jail. I can't even remember what the reason was, but I managed to get out of it. There was a link I found, someone helped me do it, and it was unlocked. It must be an erroneous ban or something. I can't remember where that was. I wish I did, but I suspect it might have changed as well. Like, how do you get out of a suspended account? Do you know anybody?
So I haven't been suspended myself because I'm obviously a good boy, but I can't walk through it. But I did research it recently, and apparently there is a mechanism. I mean, they don't just suspend you. Apparently they are supposed to say and send you, an email. Say you have been suspended. Click on this link, and then hopefully that gets you to it. But other folks have said, look, I'm off LinkedIn. I don't know how to get back on. So I don't know if they've not had that link or what the situation is there. But yeah, there's a UK marketing guy who's always been avant-garde, Chris Williams, and he's been suspended twice for profanity. So, take a hint, right? Stop saying,
I know, yes. Chris. That's terrible. That's for him. I mean, that's like
that's
really
his, that's his brand.
That's
his brand. Now, the other thing you asked about, is it automatic or not? Well, with someone like Chris has got a reputation, people, you know, like him or don't. Now, if he goes after, let's say, podsters, or if he's criticizing a certain cohort on LinkedIn, they don't like it, then they can certainly abuse that reporting system, right? They may have kicked him off because they saw him use the F word and they report it. It only takes a bunch, right? I'm not sure how many, but it only takes a few folks to say report, and then you're off until it gets investigated, and then you get back on if everything's, you know, good to go from LinkedIn.
And that's actually a real problem with moderation in general, because if you're dependent on community reporting problems,
yes,
you have to trust the community to do so in good faith, because you could be attacked by a nemesis. We talked a couple of weeks ago, months ago, I forget the dark side of LinkedIn, we had a show there, and there was some really like strange stories of people who are very, very, they just had created, I don't know, they must have psychologically, for whatever reason, very problematic, but they decided to go and attack and try and destroy someone. But if you're like on LinkedIn, it's important to you, and you have this type of person out there, then potentially they could brigade you, if you like, just corral a bunch of people to even pay them. I mean, you don't even need to have to make that much of an enemy. That person might just pay a bunch of people who are prepared to report you or support a ban, and you might get kicked off the platform.
Shadow banning. Absolutely.
Very, very difficult, right?
And Debbie's asked about Chrome extensions and which particular Chrome extensions. So I don't know that for sure, but I can tell you that any Chrome extension that is designed to scrape the data and you know, use the platform in that way, I think that's going to be more likely to result in a suspension than something like what Debbie's mentioning. I think in terms of plugging into a CRM, that's a very similar situation to Shield, the Shield app that I use, which I describe as, yes, it starts off with a Chrome extension, right? To make that link with the Shield backend, you use a Chrome extension, but then you can delete that Chrome extension. So you're no longer reliant on that. You're no longer technically breaking the UA, but Shield is different because Shield is like it's like the CSV download of my data. I'm actually downloading my data into Shield to have it analyzed. I'm not scraping the entire ecosystem of LinkedIn's data. I think that's a big difference.
Okay, interesting on the reporting side. Janae and on the Facebook Live there has just said, and I trust Janae when she talks about this, she just said that the trust and safety team on LinkedIn has just increased by 400 heads or something. So basically, they've expanded the team that will be looking at moderation stuff and complaints of this type. So yes, you need to be a good citizen. But also, I guess sometimes you know that there's a risk of anybody who's prominent or active, things might come your way that, you know, can be quite problematic. I've just shared, by the way, on the chat stream, I think quite an outdated link, but it's by Jose Cadlets, who compiled a link of the blacklisted plugins on LinkedIn from the research he did about a year and a half ago. I don't know whether it's still updated or not, but obviously might be useful for you to check out his methodology and also to check out some of the plugins that are there. But the bottom line is it's generally high risk. And depending on how important LinkedIn is to your business or your career path or your long lifetime value, so to speak, it probably makes sense to earn the side of caution, even if it suddenly becomes more laborious for you to do stuff. Like one of the hacks, for instance, I think someone's asked a question here. We can answer that real quick here, actually. How do you overcome the 100 LinkedIn friend invitation a week by Alice? I would say the way to try and do that is obviously monitor how many sort of connection requests you're making, but also try and move to an inbound way of doing those connections. So the way in which I've done it, I've hit the 30,000 mark, thank God, before all this happened, when it was much easier time to do so. But in large part, I did it by having conversations publicly on LinkedIn, having lots of people commentate on that, and then they send you the invite. You know what I mean? So it's not me sending out. It's like encouraging them to send me, and then you've got the choice of yes, knowing it, and you're free from all of that. So maybe it's a shift from outbound to inbound is the way to try and increase your network now.
Exactly. And you can also use the follower mechanism. So I see follow as a prelude to potential connections. So if someone follows me and I follow them back, then that's quite a strong signal to them, I'd say, if they followed me in the first place, then to take it to the next step. So I wouldn't be surprised if a connection request came from them. So it's like, as I say, it's like two dogs sniffing each other's tails.
I still don't understand the follower thing. I mean, what is the substantive difference between a follower and a connection? Is there one thing you could isolate to say, yeah, that's it?
Yeah. So it's really, I mean, it's confusing because LinkedIn will also make all of your connections followers too. So they do that, and that confuses things. So there are, you know, there's not actually two buckets, but the essential difference between a connection and a follower is the ease of communication. So you can communicate freely with a first degree, and the follower, you'd basically have to send them an email or join the same group as them if you wanted to communicate. And they're not really followers in the real sense of following. They followed. Because the algorithm gets between them and you. Because let's say I follow you, Hung, because I want to you know, be informed about the content that you produce. Well, that's not a given because the algorithm decides who to distribute your content to initially, and based on how well that initial test goes, then it'll decide who else to distribute, and it keeps testing to make sure that it's getting engagement at every test. As soon as it starts to get a reduction in engagement, it stops the distribution, so it doesn't actually get out to all of your followers, and that's the problem. So I say they're followed. They are not followers. At one point, they followed you, and then it's entirely up to the algorithm whether or not they actually get to follow you.
Yeah, and by the way, folks, that little comment that Andy made about how content travels through LinkedIn, I think is true for any social network. You try it on anything, TikTok, Facebook, whatever it is. It will basically, once you post something, it will be distributed to a small segment of people that you're connected to, and that's a test. That's a test to say, look, does this small segment actually give a damn about what Hung's posted? If enough people do, like, don't like, whatever it is, then it get posted to the next group of people, and then the same test applies, and then the next set and the next set. And that's the difference between having a post that has 1,000 views compared to one that have 100,000 views. You've got to get sort of the signals of engagement all the way through, which, you know, is hackable, and it also creates, you know, some of the problems we see politically, socially, etc., because outrage, you know, generally gets a lot more engagement than anything else. So it's problematic how this works, but it's true, I think, for all social networks, and, you know, something to bear in mind if you are a marketer or someone who's interested in growing your network or audience or whatever.
And creator mode, that leads us to talk of the switching to the follower from connection to follower button on your profile. That leads us nicely to LinkedIn creator mode, because LinkedIn creator mode, which was announced last month, is going to roll out to all users. LinkedIn have said that by the end of May. So all of you should actually have this option. And when do you know if you've got it? Well, if you check your dashboard on your LinkedIn profile page, you'll see a toggle to switch creator mode on. All right. Once you do that, a number of things will happen. Your connect button, if you haven't already switched it to follow, will switch to follow. All right. So that's the first thing. Another thing is you'll get to choose 5 hashtags. So 5 hashtags, which are supposed to signal to the people that are landing on that page, the topics that you are primarily interested in. So think about 5 topics that you want to be known for in terms of, you know, your sphere of interest, what you typically would either want to maybe produce in terms of content yourself or consume. All right. So think about those 5. I personally have a custom hashtag, Andy Does LinkedIn. That's going to be one of my 5. But why are you smiling? I just promoed. Was that okay?
But anybody's okay to promo, you know? This is the platform to promo, no worries. But I smiled because it was quite interesting to set like a custom hashtag. That's also an interesting strategy for people who probably produce a decent amount of content. So it's pointless to do if you're not a producer yourself of LinkedIn updates, basically. But if you are, then it might make sense to do something like that.
Yeah, so I'm building it in the hope that version 2.0 of hashtag will come along. So right now, it just gives me a follow account. I can't see who's actually followed me. That's a complete mystery, right? But version 2.0 of hashtags on LinkedIn might include sexy stuff, like, for example, knowing not just who is following, but who's clicking on it, when they're clicking on it, So what time of day they typically click on it, from which area in the world they click on it, et cetera, et cetera. So if you think about that, that would be a marketer's wet dream if hashtags 2.0 ever comes to LinkedIn. So yeah, I'm building it in the hope that, that'll become, you know, more of a utility, more powerful.
Also,
if you, I mean, it's not just, I think, if you produce content, it could be leveraged if you're a job seeker as well. And you could link it in that way too. It's really up to you how you use that custom hashtag. Make sure that it's unique to you, that it's memorable, trips off your lips, all of the above. And also, if you're going to do that, to encourage followers, put in parentheses every time you use it, some kind of call to action. So follow this for LinkedIn sites, or follow this for annoying polls, or et cetera, et cetera. But whatever, you know, whenever you do that, or whenever I've done that, I found that my follower count clicks up every time. And I've got, you know, over 1,000 followers having done that for whatever
on
the last 6 months on the hashtag alone.
So I didn't even know you could follow hashtags. I mean, this is my level of ignorance on LinkedIn. Did you know you could follow hashtags on LinkedIn, folks? Let me know, because this is a revelation for me. But it seems to me that if you can do that, it's totally worth, it's a real estate grab. Like, it makes sense for you to grab a part of, to get something that you might own, and then it could potentially grow. And it might just even, I'll tell you what this is, it will be part of a taxonomy, a hashtag taxonomy that LinkedIn are building. So they might have pre-written stuff, but then they'll take exception, they'll accept new stuff coming in, and the ones that are popular, all right, everyone's saying yes, so they're demonstrating my general lack of general lack of knowledge on this platform I really depend on. Anyway, really interesting. Thank you very much, Steve.
It's also good lead generation. So if you're following something which you would expect somebody to be posting, if, for example, they're looking for the type of service that you offer, then follow that hashtag and it'll just send you a stream of leads.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, LinkedIn are definitely doubling down on hashtag usage on LinkedIn. Now, they're obviously not going to be as strong as they potentially could be unless there's widespread adoption of them, right? Because you can't find it unless it's classified. So until we get into the habit, all of us, or many of us, of using hashtag, not just on our content, but also listing them in our profile, then I don't think they're not going to be that powerful. But LinkedIn have also said, look, use a maximum of 3, no more than 3 on your content. They've said that recently, actually, in the blurb to Creator Mode. They've also started to suggest to me, at least, maybe you've seen this too, but when you start to write a post, they've actually suggested some hashtags underneath, which is interesting. And finally, of course, listing 5 on your profile. All of these are pretty big signals, I think, that look, hashtags are important. And potentially, if you're listening to me, if you believe what I'm saying, could be even more powerful. Now, the other thing, the final thing I'd say about Creator Mode, it does some sexy things for your activity section and your featured section too. This is just one step. They've said this is the first step in the whole Creator Mode thing. There's also Cover Story, which allows you to put a little video in your headshot, a 30-second video.
Have you seen that?
Yes.
Do I have Creator?
Is it a plus? I can't see it. Is it a plus?
Can you see that? It's basically. So the video is happening on my mobile phone, I think on the cover.
All right, so that's LinkedIn Live. That's LinkedIn Live showing up in your banner. That may or may not be an indication that you have Creator Mode, but that's another new thing. So Creator Mode is they talk about those things, right? The 6 hashtags, the activity section, and the connect to the connect to follow. They don't talk about Cover Story, and they don't talk about LinkedIn Live banner. Those two may have just arrived at the same time. All right,
this is so, too much information, Andy. There's too much information, mate.
What do you want to know about?
No, I think it's too much. I think what people need to do is follow Andy Foote. and you post a lot of this stuff on LinkedIn anyway, don't you, mate?
I do. So, yes, I've written all about this.
Yeah, yeah. So for people who have obviously, you know, come to the end of the show now, I think with Andy and us three here, we could continue talking forever for it. But what you want to do is follow Andy on LinkedIn, because there's tons of free stuff you can get from there anyway. And obviously, Andy provides professional service for this. So if you want a deeper dive and really become an expert, he's your man to do it. Okay, lots more exciting things to talk about. Andy, you're going to come back in Q3 at some point and keep us updated. I hope you've enjoyed the show, everyone, folks. We're out of time. Thank you for joining and watching. Thank you for OcuPop again, our sponsors today. If you're looking to upgrade your ATS from a spreadsheet or a Google Sheet, use OcuPop. They're going to give you 30-day free trial, which I'll share here again for you to use. So experiment with it. Make sure you use it. And finally, follow the channel if you enjoy this type of chat. Next week, we're going to be talking about a journey a lot of us have made from agency to in-house. If you're a recruiter and you're working agency side and you're thinking about moving in-house, actually, we're going to get a bunch of people and we're going to talk about that, including individuals that recruit agency recruiters for in-house teams. So what are they looking for? Why are they saying yes to you and no to the other person, or vice versa? Stuff you need to know. So if you're frustrated that you're not getting your in-house opportunity, you have to tune into this show. Okay, that's it, folks. Enjoy your weekend. Have a good one. Andy, see you later. Adam, see you later.
It was a pleasure. Bye, guys.
Cool. What a great show. Andy Foote, always super, super interesting. You know, he is a fellow that he knows more about this than, you know, 1% of my brain. So do make sure you follow that dude. I'll send an email around to everyone who's on Crowdcast so that you know where his LinkedIn is. But it is Andy Foote. All right. That's it, folks. You have a good weekend. I'll see you next week.